Hello. This is the Love Letter Squad. I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen. And we welcome you to another episode of Love Letters Live, where we focus on people who have a story to tell and a love letter lurking in the heart that really needs to be stamped and mailed and sent to make somebody else's life richer. Mm-hmm. And no matter what kind of love letter you want to write, there's always somebody to send it to. Even if it's not the person you're writing it to, even if you're writing to somebody who's no longer here. So with that in mind, I just want you all to know that. We're going to go right to our guest today, Wendy Willow Warrick, who is a diversity and inclusion consultant. And Wendy, I'm just going to go to you because I know you have a lot to say. Tell us briefly what that means. What do you do?
Thank you, Janet. What I do is I work with employers, whether public, private, or nonprofit organizations, to help them understand the value of our diversity and to create an inclusive workplace and environment. And by that I mean our gender, our age, our ethnicity, our history informs how we innovate and how we solve problems and how we create and how we contribute.
Oh, I see. So you're saying people come to it with largely different cultural views of the world. They can come up with largely different solutions and products and thoughts and
Exactly. Rather than thinking of diversity as this EEO or affirmative action requirement, which most employers do, I'm trying to help them have an epiphany.
I can see that. I can see that. That's excellent. Well, talk about your what it is you came here thinking about today, because I know it was something specific and a specific story about you as a young person.
Yes. From as far back as I can remember, my Aunt Kate, who we used to call Cake, has been really my angel. She taught me what unconditional love is and embraced all nine of us. I have eight siblings. Well, I have 15 siblings, but eight full siblings with my mother and father. And it was not Leave It to Beaver Land. And so
How was it not Leave It to Beaver Land?
It was a pretty abusive environment. And it was, we were very poor and very challenged emotionally and psychically in my family. And Aunt Kate, who also had three children of her own, in a small apartment in the South Bronx in the shadow of Yankee Stadium, accepted and welcomed the nine of us as if she lived in a mansion and had plenty of room. And my two sisters and I would crowd into our cousin Jackie's bed, the girl, my girl cousin, and all four of us would crunch into this twin bed and always felt that the greatest thing that ever happened was us walking through the door.
Oh, what a
that
gift.
We, my aunt, who used to work for Adrienne Arpels, assembling cosmetics in New York City.
That's what she did?
Yes. And she would bring home samples for us, lipsticks and things, and we were thrilled as girls, of course. And she would take, you know, her few pennies and buy us paper dolls and say, go look in the closet, there's a treat. And she was from North Carolina, is from North Carolina, from Kinston, which was a small tobacco farming community, a very rural area. And she had a tough life, a very tough life. And all of my siblings, including...
May I ask how her life was tough?
Well, they were kind of classically post-Reconstruction Southern poor. They had the land but didn't have income. And she witnessed her grandfather committing suicide as a young girl with a shotgun. And so she still, to this day, has quite a stammer. And she married my father's half-brother. My father was from Puerto Rico. And his brother, Willis, my uncle, was half-American and half-Puerto Rican. So... he had been in Virginia. I have lots of family. They came from Puerto Rico to Virginia. And I guess was cruising around in the countryside and met Katie Jones and fell in love and brought her up to Harlem. They first lived in Spanish Harlem before they moved to the Bronx.
This your mother and father?
No, my aunt and uncle.
Okay, yes.
And so she was living in Spanish Harlem, you know, after growing up in this rural place. and had three children, and took in my mother when my mother was 17. And that's how my mom met my father. Well, through my half-sister Mary, who's older than my mother. It's a complex story.
Really complicated. I mean, I suppose when you have that many people, it can't be not complicated.
Yeah.
And with such sadness, too.
Yeah.
But where was the part that gave you your good cheer and amazingly wonderful outlook?
There was always enough. There was always ample. There was always an open door. If I called her right now and said, Trish and Janet are visiting from San Francisco, can you take them in? She'd give you her bed.
Mm-hmm.
It's just always...
And somehow make you think it was her.
Easy. Oh, yeah. I need to sleep on the sofa because of my back, you know. She'd make you, you know, her amazing fried chicken and almond cake and not let you wash a dish to this day. And when I go back to New York, she spoils me rotten.
How nice.
Yeah.
And how nice that you let her.
Oh.
Can we talk about that part?
Yeah. Well, I was starved for it as a kid. Didn't get much of that.
But apparently she had this huge capacity to give. And if somebody has that and you cut it off the pass, you're not, you know.
Yeah.
So you must have lived next nearby.
We lived in my parents and my aunt and uncle, Kate and Willis, and my Uncle Sammy and his wife Lydia all lived in El Barrio, which is Spanish Harlem, East mm-hmm. Harlem in Manhattan. And then my family moved to Astoria Housing Projects in Queens at the foot of the Triborough Bridge. And Aunt Kate and Uncle Willis moved to the Bronx at that foot of the Triborough Bridge, and Sammy stayed in Manhattan. So we would walk the Triborough Bridge, wait for my mother to get us out of the apartment, and go visit my aunt and uncle for the day or mm-hmm. stay over or whatever. And so we lived in separate boroughs in New York City. There were five boroughs, and yet we're incredibly close. And in fact, the emergency number at school was her number, which was JE8-4639. We did not have a telephone until I was 11.
JE8-4639.
And all of us remember that number. I can't remember my first phone number at home, but I can remember that number.
Does she still have that number?
No. She lives in Staten Island, actually, okay. now with my cousin, and is preparing to move back to North Carolina.
Oh, she is?
Yeah. Well, my cousin retires.
So I'm really interested in her.
Yes.
I mean,
Yeah, fascinating story.
Really. Talk more about her, because for somebody to be able to do this, for somebody to be able to say, you take the bed, I need to sleep on the sofa because my back hurts, and somehow make you feel you're doing her the favor.
Yeah.
Of making that sofa available to her
yeah.
is a magic act.
Yeah. And try to picture, you know, in the 1960s in the South Bronx, this little Southern lady, you know, we'd walk to the supermarket with our shopping cart and do our errands. And she could be tough as nails, but she just had this capacity to see the good in everyone. And I certainly... That was the source of it for me, because I didn't get that elsewhere.
So, but you felt safe and welcome.
Oh, yeah. That was my sanctuary. Their apartment was my sanctuary. Her and my Uncle Willis were my sanctuary. Mm-hmm. And that was safe. When things got really rough, we went there.
Oh, so that's what I was going to ask you. You went there when abusive got too much for you to even be around or witness, even if it was somebody else.
Yeah, if my father got out of control, we'd pack up and go there. And this was my father's brother, brother.
Okay.
My father was the eldest of his five surviving siblings.
So that's how she's your aunt through your father.
Yeah, she's married to my uncle's passed on years ago, yes. So is my father. But she married my father's half-brother. And so...
How did she talk to you? I mean, she knew why it was you were coming there.
We didn't talk about it.
But she knew.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So there wasn't a need to talk about it, because what would that have served?
Right. What she did was just put a salve on the wound, if you will. You know, mm-hmm. let's bake a cake. And so that's why I ate cake, because we were making a cake for someone's birthday or something. And
lots of birthdays, I think.
Oh, yeah. And we're checking on that cake, and the oven door slammed, and then we had a cake. Our cake went from cake to pancake. And so that's how she became Aunt Cake, and... And to this day, we laugh over that pancake. And we frosted that pancake, because in those days, you couldn't go out and buy more eggs. And,
no.
Right. So we frosted and served that wonderful birthday pancake. I don't remember to whom. Yeah.
Did that happen just once?
With the flat pancake? Yeah, I think so. But we've had other culinary disasters that always were made okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the magic.
Well, it sounds like her particular brilliance,
yeah,
that she could make things okay.
Yeah.
So instead of talking to you about it,
mm-hmm,
and, you know, kind of beating a dead horse, what was there to be gained, I guess, she took your mind away from it and let you know there was a better world.
Right. You know, and that the coat closet was always, I just always have this memory of, you never know what, you know, some five and dime trinket, and mm-hmm, that was invaluable to us.
Do you have any of those still?
No, I don't.
But you have them in here and in
here. Yeah, yeah.
Head.
Right. So how often do you see her now?
Whenever I get back to New York, in every year or so, you know. For a while I was getting back more frequently, which was a good thing. And so now I need to work on getting back soon. Mm-hmm. I always worry if I'm away too long.
And what is her health like?
Well, she's pretty frail. Okay. She's had a lot of digestive problems, mm-hmm, and bone and structural issues. So, you know, when you're in your upper 80s, it's...
And she has you and your sisters, and she still has all these children who love her, and...
Yeah, I don't know that my immediate siblings are in regular communication with, mm-hmm, her. I don't know how many of them are. That's another story. But, mm-hmm, but she lives with her youngest son, my cousin Bobby.
Oh, she does?
Yes. And and her daughter Jackie lives in North Carolina now. And her eldest son Patrick, my dear cousin, died 3 years ago this month.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really rough on her, of course, of cancer.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, watching your child wither away.
Oh, yes. I mean, even watching your child sick is a horrible thing.
Right. So that's been really hard for her.
So what does she do by day? I mean, how does she live her life now? Do you know? And
It's pretty simple. Mm-hmm. You know, goes to church on Sunday. And
so she has friends?
She has friends at church there. I know my half-sister Mary goes there sometimes. And it's pretty quiet now. Pretty quiet.
And that's okay with her?
Well, her hearing, I don't know. I mean, mm-hmm, there are two problems with communication. Her hearing has debilitated, and it's really hard for her to advance her voice. She, mm-hmm, speaks very, very softly. So telephone communication for us is near impossible.
Oh, I see. So letters is perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
And all her eyes.
Eyes aren't bad.
So good. she can read.
Yeah, and she sent us the last Christmas the cutest card. It was like a Victorian couple on the card, and she wrote Wendy, and Chris is my husband's name, and Wendy and Chris on the front of the card.
Oh, nice. So did she have any sense when she was young and looking after everybody that she was heroic in any way, or that she was she aware that she was doing something crucial for her family?
I don't know. I do know that she's also had a high standard for me.
Tell us about that.
It's been a few years since I've seen my mother, and my aunt really pushed me to contact my mother and, mm-hmm, said, you know, and very strong terms,
mm-hmm,
and said, you know better, and don't leave it up to her.
Don't leave the community, getting in touch up to her. Her pride wouldn't let her do it, is that?
Well, actually, my mother reached out to me, so I do believe in miracles. But but my aunt said, you know, that's not a reason. You have, the onus is on you regardless of
now,
what's occurred.
Why is that? I'm saying the onus was on you.
Because, you know, regardless of the reasons.
She's
for...
She's your mother.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And you're a grown woman now.
Mm-hmm.
So even if it's hard to do. So, yes, well, that's...
Well, I can't wait to get to the letter. Just let us remind our listeners that this is Love Letters Live. We're here at this week, here at this time every week, and hope you'll join us. So you can also catch our past programs on our website, which is www.lovelettersquad.com.
Thank you. Okay, so let's go back to, now this is where we ask who gets the love letter today, and I can see who's going to get it, but you can say your name.
Her name is Kate Seeley.
So your aunt, Kate Seeley.
My aunt.
Okay, so there's, now, you haven't written this yet, right?
No.
Perfect, because I want to get in on this. So there's so much to say to her, and I've started writing some notes, which I'm going to give you, but... What do you call? Oh, you're going to say dear Cake or dear Aunt Cake, or how do you do that?
I write dear Aunt Kate these days.
Oh, you do.
When I see her in person, Aunt Cake seems to stay verbal.
Yes, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's dear Aunt Kate.
And to start a letter, how to start a letter is a really important thing. Mm-hmm. How do you want to start this? How do you think you should or would like to? And I think one of the things that you can that can help you answer that is, why are you writing to her now? What do you want her to know?
Mm-hmm. I think it would be an amazing thing has happened. Through a dear friend of mine, I was invited to be on this radio show in San Francisco. And the show is called Love Letters Live. And they invite guests to write letters of gratitude to those who they love and who have been a true gift in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And you were the first person I thought of.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That's wonderful. That is just wonderful. So that just is such a wonderful way to open. Any way that you can say, here's why I'm here today, is wonderful. And it's clear. And it's a nice reason. You know, sometimes, even if you didn't think of it yourself and somebody did something and you thought, oh, I'm going to write this letter. What a nice thing. Okay, so then what do you want to say? You've said so much of it. You've said you were my sanctuary. You were my haven.
Mm-hmm.
You were where I could come when I needed to be safe.
Yeah, and I would start with for as far back as I can remember,
mm-hmm.
where you are has been my sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
And your unconditional love taught me to love.
That's a really important thing, because how do you learn to love if you don't see it in your home?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And when people ask me where I get my smile and my joy, I always tell them you.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the truth.
So, I think we talk about a good love letter, mm-hmm. going from being a good love letter to being a great love letter,
mm-hmm.
by the specifics.
Okay.
So she's 88 and she's a little frail, and would she like to know that you remember just what she was like when she was younger and stronger and not frail and in charge? And let's just list those things that you remember.
Well, going forward a bit, mm-hmm. to when I was 11,
mm-hmm.
She was down in Virginia visiting family, and my stepsister Iris was driving, and they were in a bad car accident.
Who? What?
My aunt was in the passenger seat, and the kids were in the back seat.
This is the car that you were in?
Nope.
Oh, I'm sorry, I missed. Say that
again.
Okay,
my stepsister Iris, uh-huh. and my aunt, and a bunch of cousins and second cousins.
They were in a bad car.
Uh-huh. In Virginia. And in those days, bucket seats didn't have a stop. And she had her knees up on the dashboard, and both of her thighs were crushed. And to this day, she's got bolts. You see the x-rays, it's like these huge nuts and bolts through her thighs, mm-hmm. bones. And so out of this horrible thing, a wonderful thing happened, which was I got to spend, I remember it as all, but who knows, you know, at least part of that summer vacation, staying with her and my uncle in their apartment in the Bronx, mm-hmm. to help take care of her. And during that time, she very, very patiently taught me to crochet.
Mm-hmm.
And operative word here is patience.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my uncle and I would cook supper. My uncle was a great, great cook and baker, and an amazing baker. And so we would do this whole thing as if we were pretending to be, you know, like she was royalty. And, and the gift she gave me was allowing me to give back.
Yes. Hmm. Yes. That, and that is an enormous gift. That's what I was saying before, that you let her give to you also.
And it also, because I was getting older, our relationship was able to mature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without the interference of holidays and all the other family stuff, it was just our time. And just every day we'd go down and sit on a bench. Her building overlooked the Hudson River in the Bronx, like over by northern Manhattan. And it's really geographically quite beautiful. People mm-hmm. don't think of the South Bronx in that way, but lots of really neat hills. mm-hmm. And so we would sit there and sit on that bench every afternoon in the sunshine and crochet, and she would tell me stories. And so I had this incredible privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I say, you know, with my other siblings, I don't know. You know, she was always working, and she was always taking care of things. And so the luxury of that time... Mm-hmm. was very rare, and
sounds like kind of an adult relationship that you had, even though you were the child.
Yeah, and you know, and even the time with my uncle, and he died 6 years later, but and he was quite special too.
He was,
yes, to me. And so that's sort of the culmination of growing up, and her always embracing and welcoming and inviting and encouraging, and it, you notice there's only positive words here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was the 50s and 60s, and there was all kinds of stuff going on, and I remember her getting angry maybe twice
mm-hmm.
In my life. Well, actually, no, third time. That's a story for another day. But you know, always over injustice. You know, she just couldn't tolerate it. And you know, not a highly educated woman,
mm-hmm.
Just salt of the earth. And she, you know, as I say, with the presence, you know, that she would, you know, get these samples they'd give out, you know, I guess errors, you know, when they were working at the factory. And so she'd get to bring home these errors. And for us, they were, you know,
of course,
prizes. And the paper dolls. So
even that, I mean, the fact that she brought you home cosmetics, she was allowing you to polish up your feminine beauty.
Yeah, yeah, and to play.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'd dress up. And
Do you remember what she looked like? And
yes, she's a brunette. And
when you first knew her as a child, what did she look like to you?
Not as thin as my mother. And that was a good thing. Because it was, you know, my fantasy mom is Zoftik. My mother is always very thin.
So she was shapely.
She was shapely.
And comfortable. Mm-hmm.
And comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Did she hug you?
Oh, yeah. And that was really needed. I didn't get a lot of that. So she was physical,
mm-hmm.
physically warm and comfortable. Had a great laugh.
Brunette, what was her style?
Her hair was similar to yours. So just, you know, to the nape of her neck, curly. You know, she curled it.
And did she have any special style of dressing or anything that you would remember?
Well, I remember the pedal pushers, of course. And but, you know, like kind of the dresses of the day, they were short sleeve buttoned down with a belt around the waist and mm-hmm. a semi-fullish.
But she was chic for...
Yeah. Well, she sewed. Her and my mother sewed. Magnificently, and my mother would make all of our clothing, us girls, and so we always looked better dressed than we should have. But and again, working for Adrian Arpel on Fifth Avenue in New York, you're exposed to some good looking people.
So you have a lot to tell her about the things you remembered.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess mostly you want to tell her that she helped make you who you are today. And do you want to tell her or remind her that, I mean, you're obviously successful in what you do, and you've made a wonderful life for yourself?
I want to tell her that here I am at 50 years old, and she has been the one constant source of goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And that my life, which is absolutely devoted to helping people thrive,
mm-hmm.
is certainly a reflection of everything she's given me and taught me, and will continue.
So you're definitely carrying her with you?
Everywhere I go.
Okay. So let me ask you something. What kind of stationery will you use?
Oh, I'm going to go buy something beautiful.
Yes, okay. that's important. Yeah. You say that, you know, that choosing the stationery is the first hello of the love letter.
Yeah, she's...
What will she think is beautiful stationery?
Something floral. You know, I'm thinking pastel-y, floral, springy.
So when it shows up on her pile of mail, mm-hmm. it'll be a Here I Am gift.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And handwriting.
Script.
Good. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Will you write a little bit bigger? And I'm saying this only because I think it's something to point out to listeners when you're writing to somebody who's older and eyes may not be as good as they were. It's kind. It's a kindness to write in a slightly larger handwriting.
Oh, that's a good point. Okay.
Because the point of a letter is you want to get it read.
Yeah, yeah.
And also love letters are private, and it's probably nice if somebody doesn't have to go to somebody else to have it read to them. Do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes good sense.
Okay. And nice, strong stationery, indelible ink. This should last forever.
Mm.
Yes. So now you have a family now. You're married and...
No children.
Uh-huh. But you have nieces and nephews. And,
yes,
okay,
lots
because,
of them.
Because somebody will find this in years to come, mm-hmm. and they'll know something really beautiful about you.
Yeah.
And how you loved.
Yeah, and I try to be one quarter the aunt that she is.
I bet you're wonderful.
Well, Wendy, this is such an important lesson for listeners and everyone to know. It's about how adults can have such a positive influence on children's lives, even if they aren't the parents, but being part of the village. And sometimes those other adults can even have more importance than parents, because in a way, you know, our parents have to love us, they have to take care of us because that's their job. But other adults choose to love
different
us
kind of validation.
And take it's a different kind of a validation. So even if you aren't a parent, or if your children are already grown and beyond, you can still be a very positive influence in the lives of children.
Yes, as yours was. I mean, this is just the clearest example for that, and I can see that in some ways more critical to your emotional health and success than your own parents were able to be. Yes. And how nice that she encouraged you to talk to your mother so that you don't ever have that weighing on you that you didn't and you it'll be too late someday. That's a good feeling. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Right, and Janet, we often remind people if this letter appears to be too long that you're writing and because you have so much to say and you think that she might not be able to take it all in, you could also make it two letters or three letters.
Hmm. Yes. That's
a series.
Yes, yes. And I have another question. You mentioned that there were other people you thought of, and of course choosing the person to get the letter is very important. You had another couple of people that you thought around this episode in your life that you could write a letter to? Or other episodes?
Other episodes.
So you can do that too?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I mean, I think once you start, you always say, mm-hmm. Teresa.
Sometimes you can't get stopped because it feels so good.
Yeah. You know why? Because you're sitting there, and even in a life where there are so many negative, painful, hurtful, damaging things, if you sit and you write a love letter, you're just bathing in the positive. The love letter is the time for just focusing on the good part and sharing your appreciation of that, and you find yourself sitting there bathing in positive. You would barely know that there was negative in life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yay.
Well, unfortunately, time for us to end for this session. Just to remind our listeners, we love to hear from you, and this is where email is so wonderful. Please visit our website, www.loveletterssquad.com, and send us your questions, your comments. Tell us stories about your own love letters that you have sent or received. We'd love to hear from you.
You
can also join our blog.
Please do. And I want to say that's Love Letter Squad singular. So mm-hmm. it's letterssquad.com. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And please remember that if you think ever for a minute that you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, that writing a love letter is that special occasion.
So until next week, with love from Teresa
and Janet, the squad. Bye.
Bye-bye.